Page 58. Compromise under National Socialism. With the disappearance of the old compromise structure and its accompanying internal checks in Europe, a new type of government is emerging, of which at first glance greater independence and power seems the outstanding characteristics. The new type is found in various more or less transitional forms. The automatic integration of the political structure by money in the 19th century and the systematic use of the credit apparatus to this end in the period of mass democracy has given way to a form of domination by institutionalized monopolies. These changes have occurred in their most pointed form in Germany. The German economic system consists of various monopolies in which the competitive elements have only an oasis character. Footnote 31, text. The monopolies are of three kinds: the government labor monopoly, the private monopolies in industry and the food estate. The character of these monopolies must be defined in terms of their relationship to the public authorities and in terms of their inner structures. Whereas the monopoly for industrial and agricultural labor is a public monopoly under joint state and party control, allowing few opportunities for self-expression to individuals. The industrial monopolies and those in the food estate are administered by private interests, which have been given a public character. Footnote 32. Text. As such, they form the backbone of a new system of guarantees, which has taken over the role of the checks and balances inherent in the social structure under the old compromise system. The first of these guarantees applies to the privileged groups in general. The abolition of institutional fluctuations produced by the democratic process of elections and the replacement of this process by a strong government has dispensed with the need to rely on the pressure potentialities of credit control. Greater security is calculated not only to outweigh the restriction in the possible choice of investments, especially the inability to diminish risks by investing abroad, but also to counterbalance the diminished degree of personal freedom. There is an increased economic security for the purported and professional classes as a whole to replace the small degree of individual liberty and the arbitrariness which the individual finds in the totalitarian state. For various reasons, the democratic government of the Weimar Republic distributed unsystematic favors and also, not having promised to do so, was forced to take over the bulk of losses in the realm of banking and heavy industry. Page 59. The economic policies of the fascist government, however, have not only reduced these risks almost to nil, but have enabled big industry to make investments which are required by conditions of modern technology, but to which, because the risks involved, it was formerly unable or unwilling to commit itself. A further guarantee lies in the active encouragement of the process of monopolization and cartelization and the transformation of a private power position that was only tolerated by law into monopoly that remains private, yet is vested with public power. This monopolization takes two forms. First, cartelization is extended through the establishment of a complete network of market-regulating bodies in every sphere. And second, the number of independent units in a given field is progressively reduced. Both processes are intimately interrelated. The cartel policy of National Socialism shows three stages of development. At the beginning, in 1933, we find a policy of active help granted to private market organizations. In two ways. First, by considerably restricting the jurisdiction of the cartel tribunal, and second, by making cartelization compulsory and compelling outsiders to attach themselves to existing cartels. Even at this stage, we can see a process which is significant for the new relationship between industry and the public authorities. Every increase in organizational power granted to the private industrial and trade associations is accompanied by an increase in the supervisory power of the corresponding government agencies. Whereas state sovereignty is used to give the cartel power it would not obtain on a voluntary basis. Footnote 33. Text. The government builds up its own apparatus, which acts as an organ to harmonize the group interests of business with the interest of other recognized social groups. The second stage occurs when the official organization of industrial self-administration, which has replaced the earlier Reichsverband der Deutschen Industrie and its branches, emerges as an active agent in the process of cartelization. In theory, the system of industrial groups and chambers now formed is specifically excluded from any task pertaining to market regulation. Also, its jurisdiction embraces almost all other fields of industrial policy and organizations. But in practice, it is inevitable that the cartels, the supervision of which is one of the main tasks of this new organization, soon begin to dominate these official organizations. In the years 1936 and 1937, when attacks were being launched against the price level produced by this thoroughgoing cartelization, and when the office of the price commissioner was created, there was a kind of sham battle against this growing identity between the official groups and the private organization which regulated the market. Page 60. But in this battle, no use was ever made of the coercive machinery of the government, and the Reich Ministry of Economic Affairs contented itself with issuing orders asking for reports and justifications of this identity of personnel and with promulgating general lines of direction. Footnote 34. Text. Even this sham battle soon subsided, and in 1939 we reached the third stage in which the cartels, in their role as executive organs of the Reich Boards, were officially recognized as all-embracing organs of market regulation. Footnote 35. Text. As mandatories of the Reich Boards, which in their turn are independent legal personalities, through subordinate to the Ministry of Economic Affairs, they now, to an increasing degree, regulate the distribution of both raw material and finished products. Footnote 36. Text. Thus, the process of cartelization has reached its logical conclusion in the final merger of private power and public organization. Footnote 37. Text. The process of concentration which accompanied thoroughgoing cartelization was accelerated for many reasons. The necessity for maximizing the speed of all deliveries pertaining to armaments required the use of labor-saving devices, which in their turn depended on substantial investments, a need which became more and more evident with the increasing scarcity of labor. The shortage of raw materials worked against the small firms, which had few imports and bureaucratic connections of their own, and the expropriation of the Jews led in the same direction. In commerce, and especially in retail, trade, and handicraft, firms with the largest turnover increased their competitive advantages as they were able to obtain a greater supply of goods for distribution. They were also able better to withstand the reduction of the profit margin necessitated by the rather rigid control of prices for consumer goods. The economic pressure leading to concentration is accompanied by direct legal pressure. This has been used most vigorously against the owners of small shops and workshops. Pressure by powerful competitors who want to increase their sales in order to balance other unfavorable developments in cost factor has been aided and abetted by the government desire to force marginal shop owners into the factories. At first, there was a process of indirect strangulation by governmentally approved exclusion from discounts if the small shops did not reach a certain sale figure, and pressure was exercised in the same direction through a closer supervision of smaller plans by the social honor courts. This was soon followed by legislation aimed at a wholesale combing out. Footnote 38, text. Page 61. The slow disappearance of the small businessman is speeding up. Shops are closed if they are deemed unnecessary for the national economy. The debts, as far as it is thought advisable, are paid off by official organizations, and the former shopkeepers and businessmen are sent off to the factory. For industry as such, the direct legal measure furthering concentration are of a double nature. In the first place, the process of compulsory standardization of types carried on from 1938 deprives many producers of their independent status and thrusts them down to the level of specialized departments of larger units by restricting them to the production of parts of the finished product. This was especially the case in the automobile industry. The war has given new force to this development by causing the compulsory closure of the technologically more backward factories. Some of the owners of these have been entirely removed from the field and have become mere rentiers. Others have been temporarily degraded to the level of wholesalers in their respective fields, receiving a special colleague discount which had to be given to them by the more fortunate members of the industry. Footnote 39, text. Whatever the manifold individual variations in the various industries, it is clear that in spite of somewhat contradictory ideology, the mergers that have thus been brought about tend to become permanent and tend permanently to eliminate the units which were closed provisionally. Footnote 40, text. The stronger the organizations, the greater the degree of liberty they have in administering the regulations that apply to their members. At the bottom, in handicraft, where the head of the organization lives more from his proved devotion to the National Socialist cause than because of the weight of his economically and financially weak organization, the administration's direct interference is comprehensive. The head of the organization simply acts as an executive organ of the state bureaucracy in combing out the weaker members. Footnote 41, text. In the sphere of large-scale business, the transformation of position of private power into public organs of economic self-administration, though accompanied by the transfer of legal omnipotence to the supervisory ministries and special boards, has increased rather than decreased the power of those who dominate the organization. Behind the legal screen of the leader principle, which requires that the group leaders be appointed by the public authorities, the absolutistic principles governing monopolized business groups continue unabated, especially since the complete demise of the stockholders as a supervisory organ. Even the legal prescription have to take this reality into account, and the group leader is required to submit the annual votes to confidence by his advisory boards. Page 62. A negative vote would not legally be followed by his dismissal. but, as the official commentator says, would only necessitate inquiries by higher bodies. Footnote 42, text. But, of course, the social function of this vote of confidence cannot be obscured by placing it in the context of the new constitutional phraseology. It expresses the state of affairs which prevails throughout the organizational setup of German industry.